You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We are providing our farmers with the short-term support that they need through our Farmer Bridge Assistance Program and others. In just the last year alone, we have delivered tens of billions of dollars in targeted direct relief to farmers, farmers who are weathering rising input costs, devastating storms, and temporary market disruptions.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins testifying before a Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Ag. USDA has already sent nearly $9.6 billion in Farmer Bridge assistance payments as crop producers continue to face weak prices and high cost. American Farm Bureau Federation says many farms still operating at a loss or near break-even, even with federal help in place. Almost 500,000 applications have been approved. Corn received the largest share at about $3.45 billion, followed by soybeans at $2.27 billion. Wheat, cotton, and rice also accounted for major shares of the federal aid. Support is helping cash flow, but not covering the full downturn. Reports said all nine principal row crops still expected to post negative returns even after federal assistance is accounted for. Iowa producers have received the most assistance so far, $843 million. Texas second was $784 million, Illinois third at $765. It really reflects, though, where the majority of eligible row crop acres are located. Panama Canal moving more ships and cargo in fiscal 2026 while keeping traffic flowing. Officials said 6,200 vessels crossed the canal from October through March, up 224 from a year earlier. Volume reached 254 million tons. That's about 5% higher than the same period from the fiscal year before. Reservations remain strong, but the system still working without a queue. Container traffic and liquefied petroleum gas have been the key drivers in recent months. U.S. red meat production fell last year as lower cattle and hog slaughter pulled total output below the previous year. Lower slaughter numbers helped tighten supplies even as animal weights moved higher. USDA says total red meat production, 53.8 billion pounds, down 2%. Beef production fell 4% to 26.1 billion pounds. Pork slipped 1%. Lamb and mutton production edged slightly higher. Commercial cattle slaughter was down 6%, 29.8 million head. Hog slaughter down 1 to 128 million head. But average live weights increased. Cattle up 33 pounds to 1,432. Hogs 1 pound heavier at 289. And finally, Ag Secretary Rollins announcing USDA is issuing a second supplemental disaster relief program payment to eligible producers and extending the time for stage one and stage two.
We closed the portal to start figuring out how to deploy the money. And then I got a call from Senator Slotkin, actually from Michigan, another big specialty crop state. And she said, Brooke, my guys didn't even know how to apply. This is such a new day for them. So we reopened the portal for another 30 days and deployed more resources to help the specialty croppers be able to apply for these programs. So again, I realize we have a long way to go, but I do think we're making some progress.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Europe has done nothing to implement the trade deal. Nothing. So it's actually for the EU to say, well, we're suspending it. What are they suspending?
U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Jamieson Greer speaking earlier this year in Davos, Switzerland.
For example, when we made the trade deal with the Europeans, shortly thereafter, we modified our tariffs to be much lower. We cut them a deal on autos that other people don't have. We cut them a deal on other products other people don't have. Europeans have not lowered a single tariff for us. They have their process. I understand they have their process. Yeah. My point is, it actually doesn't change the status quo of outcomes, which is what we're focused on. Now, does it complicate negotiations? The Europeans have said that it does, so I trust them. They know their situation better than I do. I'm always open to having silos and compartmentalizing. I understand the Europeans feel differently. I've had communications with our counterparts. I'll see Maro Sefcovic this week. We'll have further discussions. I operate in the real world, right? I know the kind of effect this has had on the European view of the United States and the trade agreement. If the Europeans have decided that they're going to loop the trade agreement into Greenland, and they'll come back and say, well, no, you looped the trade agreement into this. The reality is, if you look at the trade agreement as drafted, the joint statement, it doesn't solve every problem, nor was it intended to. There are things that are not addressed in the trade agreement. It doesn't fix all of the agricultural issues we have with Europe. Some of them it does. It doesn't fix the regulatory issues, which are hugely problematic. It doesn't fix pharmaceutical price. There are all kinds of things it doesn't fix. And so the idea that somehow this was a comprehensive trade agreement, that was never the idea. So we can have different things going on at the same time, and I think we have to. I think when you have a trade agreement, and if something happens outside the bounds of that trade agreement, like this, countries have a decision to make, and they're going to base it on their domestic politics, on what they think they need to do. And part of what I've been discussing this whole time is that trade should be focused on national interests and that we shouldn't be bound to agreements that tie our hands. And so if the Europeans have decided we're not going to be bound to this, we think it ties our hands, we're going to do something else, that's a European choice. I don't agree with them, right? I think we can compartmentalize. If they feel differently, then that's their national interest, fine. But then they enter into a world where the escalation you're talking about can happen, right? I'm a realist. I live in a realist world. If the Europeans decide to roll everything together into a trade agreement that by its terms was limited to some of the most important issues, that's a sovereign decision for them. I mean, listen, things have always happened. Take the Japanese, for example, okay? We've always had great relationships with the Japanese. We've had a good security relationship. But in the 80s, we had a trade war with the Japanese, right? And we ended up taking strong trade measures. But they were able to compartmentalize, and so were we. I'm not saying it's easy, and again, I'm being realistic. I'm not, pretending that it's easy for the Europeans to do this. It's clearly not. But there is a history of doing this. When we have a trade dispute at the WTO or something, that's an isolated dispute. When we do anti-dumping countervailing duties, that's an isolated dispute. I mean, it is part and parcel of trade. I mean, it gets this idea, there's this suggestion that somehow we can get to a spot where everything is perfect and working, and it's just not. There are always going to be issues. You should negotiate deals that address the issues as best as they can. That's what you should do. And then you have other issues that happen. You have to deal with them as they come. I mean, until we get to the point where Europe has eliminated all of its digital trade issues, India's taken all its tariffs down, China stopped subsidizing, then maybe we can all, hold hands and sing the song of globalization together. But until then, we're going to have deals, we'll have setbacks, we'll go forward two steps. I mean, it's just the reality of the world we live in.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
The 2025 harvest was the smallest in more than a quarter century, but it was still much larger than market analysts were expecting. Thus, the reduction in wine inventory will be less than was hoped for, and grape demand is likely to remain weak this year.
Chris Bitter is a senior wine and grape analyst at Terrain on the 2025 grape crush.
However, the crush wasn't uniformly small. Demand for white grapes held up better than that for reds, and the 2025 Sauvignon Blanc harvest was a record. Moreover, the North Coast had seen essentially no reduction in total grape output over the last 2 years. The California Department of Food and Agriculture's Grape Crush report shows prices were down again in 2025, though the prices are backward-looking and not indicative where the market stands today. Grape prices have lagged inflation in almost all districts over the past decade and are down in absolute terms in three. Napa is the exception. According to the Grape Crush report, the 2025 California grape crush came in at 2.62 million tons, the smallest since 1999. This represented an 8% drop from 2024, the smallest harvest since 2004, and was 23% below the five-year average. The crush was down year over year and below the trailing five-year average in both the coast and interior regions. However, two districts, Napa and Mendocino, saw crushes that were slightly above average. The smaller crop was due in part to vineyard removals and adverse weather conditions in some areas. More importantly, a substantial quantity of fruit, perhaps 20% of the crop, was left on the vine because there was no buyer. Growers who were fortunate enough to have sold their fruit in 2025 received lower prices. The overall weighted average price per ton declined by 4% to $987, and the average price for sales between unrelated parties fell 8%. Unrelated party prices fell in 16 of 17 districts.
He talks about steep declines in crush.
Most California regions have seen steep declines in grape output over the past 2 years. The southern interior crushed 31% fewer grapes per year in 2024 and 2025 than it did between 2019 and 2023. Central gross output is down 28%, and the northern interior crush fell by 22%. Conversely, the North Coast hasn't yet seen any reduction in its grape harvest. While its 2025 crush was down slightly compared with 2024, it wasn't exactly small, and over the past 2 years, the North Coast crush has averaged 478,000 tons, slightly above the 472,000 tons per year that were crushed in the prior 5 years. Resilient North Coast grape output is partly attributable to generous yields in recent years. Additionally, fewer vineyards have been removed compared with the interior and central coast. Grape demand has also been stronger as the North Coast remains California's premier wine growing region, and premium and luxury wine sales volumes have been declining at a slower rate than sales of lower priced bottles. Nonetheless, North Coast grape prices have been falling and a substantial amount of fruit was left on the vine in 2025. Thus, supply is clearly outstripping demand in the North Coast as it is in other regions. The consequence of resilient North Coast grape output is that there will be plenty of North Coast wine available from the 2024 and 2025 vintages. Thus, inventory is likely to remain excessive. Indeed, Turrentine Brokerage indicates that North Coast bulk wine availability has surged over the past several years and now looks to be at an all-time high. The North Coast should remain favorably positioned vis-a-vis wine sales trends over the medium term. But more vines will likely need to be removed to bring the grape market back into balance unless premium and luxury wine sales volumes begin to grow again in absolute terms.
That's Chris Bitter with Terrain. And this is Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I appreciate the opportunity to provide an update on the Department of Agriculture, the challenges that we've inherited, what we've accomplished so far, and where we are heading under President Trump's leadership, and the opportunity to be back in front of so many of you friends and partners in this effort to revive, restore rural America, and certainly at the heart of that, our agriculture system, our farmers and ranchers.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins before a Senate subcommittee on ag appropriations.
We have not been shy about noting that the administration, when we came in a little over a year ago, inherited a farm economy that saw the cost of doing business skyrocket. Commodity prices had plummeted from 30-year highs in the last administration. Farm income experienced historic declines, and our farmers saw no new trade deals in 4 years and inherited a forecasted $50 billion U.S. agricultural trade deficit after leaving just 4 years before with an agricultural trade surplus. While we've already made substantial progress in reversing this trajectory for American ag, I want to acknowledge that such a seismic reroute cannot happen overnight, which is why it is so important that our work continues, because food security remains a matter of national security. And it's been a pleasure being able to partner with all of you on both sides of the aisle as we have continued this important work this last 14 months. We are providing our farmers with the short-term support that they need through our Farmer Bridge Assistance Program and others. In just the last year alone, we have delivered tens of billions of dollars in targeted direct relief to farmers who are weathering rising input costs, devastating storms, and temporary market disruptions. President Trump and our congressional Republicans delivered unprecedented wins, the largest investment in rural American history under the working families tax cuts. This included an increase in reference prices for the first time in over a decade. Senator Hovind, I remember our little meeting last spring when we talked about, is there even a possibility to include a lot of this in the One Big Beautiful Bill? And thanks to your leadership and our president's support, you were able to include those reference price increases, improving crop insurance by enhancing coverage and lowering premiums, making the death tax exemption permanent for over 2 million family farms, permanently doubling the small business expensing under Section 179, and authorizing, this is just a few wins, authorizing $50 billion for a new rural health transformation program now run by Dr. Oz. Input costs, of course, remain top of mind for our farmers. And recently, USDA has been working literally around the clock to harness the cost of key inputs like fertilizer, certainly what has happened in the last 45 or 50 days. The Trump administration has already taken a whole suite of actions to make fertilizer more affordable and available. We are working across the cabinet to accelerate private investment, to lift permitting slowdowns, to align on transportation challenges, lifting the Jones Act, opening up lines from Venezuela, and much more to be announced very soon. These are meaningful actions in the short term, but we are also working on a long-term strategy, and that has really been the spotlight that has been shined on these input costs recently has allowed a larger conversation than normal about the importance of reshoring our fertilizer industry and certainly our domestic supply chains for our agriculture, including amplifying new technologies and ensuring farmers will continue to have secure, accessible options when any crisis heads our way.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of factors we look at. You know, there's that one where it's contracting, the manufacturing jobs numbers are, you know, kind of middling. But there are other ones that also indicate that, you know, the boom is coming.
U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Jamison Greer agrees some of the numbers aren't showing success yet.
And I would say that construction jobs have gone up significantly. Manufacturing productivity has shot up over the past year. Manufacturing wages have gone up. So there are some indicators that we don't have the jobs right now, because normally when you're building a factory, it takes some time. You have to get these things going. And so we're seeing the construction starts. We're seeing the construction jobs going up. We're seeing productivity going up. So I think that all of that activity is happening right now to get it up and running. And so we'll see more of that in the coming year. We also have the full effect of the tax bill, which allows for expensing for capital goods, R&D, and that kind of thing. So we're watching that. Those indicators, they're not where I want them to be yet, but we're confident they'll get there.
So it's not fair to compare a jobs number from a year ago to today.
You have to remember, in the United States, with our new immigration policy, a lot of folks have left the United States. And so and we cut some government jobs because we didn't want an economy fueled by illegal immigration and government jobs. So the present, you know, over the past year, there have been 650,000 jobs created, and they're all in the private sector. And they're all to Americans. So that's the kind of healthy job growth we want. We don't want an economy that's fueled by government jobs. So you're going to see that effect in the labor numbers. I think the middle of this year, I think the labor numbers will be a little more reflective of our policies outside of, you know, the immigration and government cuts.
Says inflation has driven prices higher, not tariffs.
So if you look at the drivers of inflation, these are all related to services we don't import that are subsidized by government. Healthcare, housing, education. Or energy to some degree, right? So these are areas we don't import these things. That's where the largest impact of inflation is. And if you look at where we were in the Biden administration, I think we hit a high of 9% or something like that. We're now down to 2.7. I mean, that's huge progress. And then when you look at the actual, you know, inflation numbers, For goods, you know, there are a few goods here and there where we have seen high prices, right? Beef is one of these. That's related to the size of the U.S. cattle herd, right? It's cyclical, and every 10 years it gets low, and then you build it back up. Mm. You know, things like coffee, like tariffs can't control a weather event in Brazil 18 months ago, which affects, you know, commodity prices and the downstream. So, you know, can tariffs have an effect on price? Of course they can have an effect on price, but it's typically not an inflationary effect. Right? You might get that if you have like a single supplier overseas and they have huge market power to raise the price. But most of these people overseas who are selling to U.S. market want to keep that market share. And so they're competing. And so are all the people along the supply chain before it gets to the consumer to eat a portion of that. And so that's why we're not seeing overall inflation. You may see some price effects here on there for specific items.
Sure, you can cherry pick numbers, but focus on what's important.
You can cherry pick. You can go to a certain month and say, you know, inflation went up for goods by, you know, 0.3%, but then I can find another one, I say, oh, but durables goods went down by 4%. I mean, when you look at the overall trajectory of inflation, it's in check and going down. And importantly, you know, when we talk about the growth that we're experiencing in the United States, it's not just about the prices, it's about wages. And wages are outpacing inflation, especially for blue-collar workers, especially for manufacturing jobs. When you look at the Biden administration, you know, real wages went down by $3,000 over that administration. We're already up $1,300, and we're only a year in. So we're trying to claw back out of this place where we were found. And the fact that wages are outpacing inflation is a really important part of the calculation when we look at the economic effects of our overall program.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The March survey response rate was the lowest ever at 37%, down 7% from last year. Over 80% of the survey responses were received after the Middle East conflict began. Although no one knows how long the conflict will last, Terrain doesn't expect a significant shift to soybeans as many U.S. farmers had previously secured fertilizer needs.
Talking soybeans, Bree Botts, Terrain's grain and oilseed analyst.
Other countries may strongly consider the impact of rising input costs and choose to plant less fertilizer-intensive crops such as soybeans. If that's the case, global supplies and ending stocks will likely rise and continue to outpace global demand, pressuring U.S. new crop exports and prices. However, the 2026 soybean crop has a long way to go until harvest, so weather conditions during the planting and growing season will ultimately determine yields and supplies for the new crop balance sheet. Farmers should carefully weigh the risk of lower prices overall against weather-related rallies that may occur during the planting or growing season. Global demand for bulk soybeans continues to be volatile and questionable. It is becoming less likely that the U.S. will see additional old crop export sales to China near 8 million metric tons or nearly 300 million bushels as previously promoted by the U.S. administration. As of March 1st, the USDA's quarterly grain stocks report indicates 2.1 billion bushels have been stored in 2026, up 10% from last year. This reflects the softer demand thus far this crop year. Based on the actual export sales pace this crop year to date, I believe the USDA export sales forecast is still 100 million bushels too optimistic and expect ending stocks to rise accordingly to 450 million bushels, despite China's purchasing total 12 million metric tons. Chinese President Xi Jinping and President Trump are expected to meet mid-May to discuss trade relations. Given China has yet to purchase any new crop soybeans for 2026-27, new crop export sales bookings to China during quarter two and quarter three will be critical. Anything less than the 25 million metric tons of U.S. soybean exports to China will lead to rising stocks, pressuring prices. China has also resumed canola purchases from Canada, which could limit its import needs of other oilseeds like soybeans. While Brazil is experiencing some logistical delays with its soybean harvest, it is still record large. Brazil remains the cheapest global supplier, and its supplies will eventually hit the global market, limiting U.S. bulk exports. Late in March, the Environmental Protection Agency set the highest levels of biofuels ever required to be blended into the U.S. fuel supply as part of its renewable volume obligations, or RVOs, for 2026 and 2027. Biofuel obligations are at 26.81 billion Renewable Identification Numbers, or RINs, for 2026 and 27.02 billion RINs for 2027. The EPA also announced a 70% partial reallocation of the 2023 to 2025 outstanding small refinery exemptions, or SREs, to clean up the backlog. This means that the blending obligations will be even higher than the 2026 and 2027 RVOs, which leads to incremental demand for feedstocks like soy oil. Additionally, the EPA indicated that in 2028, imported fuels and biofuel feedstocks will only receive half of the RIN value of domestic fuels and feedstocks. While the EPA states that this two-year delay to the initial timeline will help biofuel producers prepare for the change in practice, it also delays the prioritization of domestic feedstocks like soy oil over imported substitutes like used cooking oil from China and tallow from Brazil. The bottom line? The U.S. biofuel industry finally has clarity through 2027 on the blend requirements. Although the treatment of imported feedstocks remains status quo, the industry should begin to recover with biofuel production ramping up. This will help reduce soy oil stocks, which have been rising in the past few months because of record crush pace.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.